Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. For millennia, spirituality has been a deeply personal solo experience, but today's world is more social than ever, and interconnectedness is transforming everything, from our family lives to our work. What we need now, says internationally known contemporary spiritual teacher Patricia Albert, is a spirituality that focuses more on we than me. A leader in the emerging field of post-personal development, Patricia Albert is the founder of the Evolutionary Collective, and she's the author of the best-selling book, Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Transformative Power of Mutual Awakening. Patricia Albert joins me now to explain why we need to move away from individual spiritual work and how we can discover the power of creating conscious and conscious and connection and activate our highest potentials by turning towards each other to develop a new paradigm of relatedness by developing evolutionary relationships. Patricia, welcome. Sorry for that little glitch there, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here with you.
So in your book, Evolutionary Relationships, you talk about more than four decades. Sorry, it's based on more than four decades of teaching, your teaching work to help people find and transform any committed relationship. And we're talking about friends, lovers, family, any kind of relationship at all. Into a dynamic engine for mutual evolution. I'm curious to know more about, let's hope, and why do we need them?
Well, that's a big question. So first, I mean, I think human beings don't often realize that there are so many different possibilities in like how we live, the level of consciousness that we live in, and that our relationships are the same. You know, we just assume that, that we have like a limited menu of, you know, what a relationship can be, what a friendship could be, what a love relationship could be, what a marriage can be. And as I share in the book towards the beginning is, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you can actually see some people's relationships, like some are more at the bottom, basically where they're, you know, they're, it's safety, physical needs, helping with the, you know, the kids in the garage and making sure that we can survive better together, you know, than alone, obviously. And even the sexuality can be more basic. Do you know what I mean? It can be not, you know, nice, but kind of basic, right?
Comforting rather than exciting.
Yeah, safe, secure, and making babies and, you know, doing whatever you're doing. At whatever kind of relationship you're in. And then if you start to move up, you know, there's self-esteem, there's other levels that you're looking for to reflect in your relationship. Sometimes relationships are very dynamic as far as supporting you in your career or your work or your art or whatever you care about, and you supporting what I'm creating. And there's like a synergy between that, which is very different than making sure that we have paper towels in the garage. You know, I mean, you can feel the difference.
Yeah.
So if you keep going up, people who are very successful hit the actualization level, and they're often actualized spiritually and, you know, sort of they're competent, they're successful, they're doing whatever they're doing. But they aren't necessarily that spiritual quality is not necessarily there. There are a lot of very successful people who have really good lives and they're good people and they create what they create together. But it doesn't sort of go into the transcenders, which is a higher level. So in relationship, first of all, so I'm going to go further than this, but just to know that you could possibly have a relationship with someone that includes all, you know, having a barbecue in your backyard, and it includes this transcendent level that you actually want to be with someone who does yearn and is cultivating a spiritual connection and does want to share that with you rather than it just being an individual pathway. You know, they go off and meditate and you put up with the fact that they go off and meditate and then you come back and carry on doing your relationship. It's two people that are genuinely wanting to explore those higher frequencies, those different potentials of love, those different potentials of connection. Even if you thought about like Claire and St. Francis, you know, the two saints, you know, they had definitely what I would call an evolutionary relationship, a transcendent relationship. Like they didn't have sex with each other, but they were communing on some level that was, I'm sure, exquisite and was in service to something greater.
You know, I meet a lot of people these days who have a relationship that they say they might not have normally had with each other, but something, call it a contract, call it a shared interest, call it their joint missions, seem to have brought them together. And that seems to be a different kind of relationship because they might not have all of the same, I don't know, passion or sexual excitement, but that's replaced by something else, another dynamic that, you know, they are creating something really powerful together. Well, is this what you're talking about?
No. So that's more of a karmic relationship. And sometimes like one of the distinctions in relationship is you can have same substance and same purposes. It's one of the things to feel into when you're in a relationship, you know, in a love relationship. So, or even in a friendship. So same purposes is a little bit of what you're sharing. Like sometimes two people have an incredible relationship and they have the same sense of purpose. Mm. And yet they don't have that same substance quality. Like the same substance has to do with not just sexual chemistry. It has to do with like you are one. Like you're made out of the same thing somehow. Like there's some level of communion that you can't explain and you don't know why them, you know, but somehow you have it. For me, I mean, since I'm aware of those things, I mean, I had a relationship with someone who is now no longer on the planet, but where it was same purposes and same substance. And that's, you know,
how was that different for you than other relationships?
It was not even in the same realm. So I'm talking about this evolutionary relationship part, but really what I teach now and what I experienced with Peter, and I'll speak a little bit more about that, is there's relating. Relating means there's two. That means, you know, you and I are, you're over there, I'm over here, and we're relating. And maybe we're relating well, or maybe I have projections, or maybe I'm not really listening to you or something, you know, but we're relating across the distance. And what we're grateful for is when we get close, you know, when we get into some form of closeness or intimacy, or where we're sort of touching and we're a little bit more in the same world. Oneness is not relationship. So shared oneness, which is what my whole mission is at this point, and what I experienced with Peter for the 4 years he was with me, and he died at the end of the 4 years, was oneness. And oneness is not between two. So, and I didn't realize at the time, I mean, I was just grateful because he was just this gorgeous German, you know, he's from Berlin, you know, this handsome kind of Jesus looking guy, Christofferson, and just was so, he was like totally sexy, but he was kind of a monk at the same time, you know, so he was completely devoted to transcendence and to what was possible. And he never was dissuaded from that. Like he, you know, he woke up in the morning and that was what life was about. And he went to bed at night and that's what life was about. Like he never took breaks. Like just watching a football game or something. He was passionate about awakening. Yeah. So that was unusual, number one, to meet a man. In my work, I had been very devoted to transforming, you know, tens of thousands of people's lives. I was very busy doing that for about 25 years before I met him. And what was interesting was, as we turned towards each other, we're both very intense, very passionate, you know, types, right? Anyway, probably too much for other people, but we were perfect for each other. Was as we turned towards each other with this deeper commitment, not just to each other, but to something greater, we just kept getting taken. And like, you could feel layers of our egos getting peeled off. You know, love makes you so vulnerable and so crazy sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got a bit of both. And so we just kept on, we were like in this space together that every 24 hours, something, we were being transfigured through loving each other and being together and being sort of inside this world where we were inside the same world. So when he looked at me, you know, and I'd look at him, and then we'd sort of look around, we'd go like, do you see that? And I'd be like, yeah, you know, like we weren't, it wasn't, I wasn't in my world and he wasn't in his world and we were sharing. We were like popped through, like we were in the same reality. And I felt my divinity. I felt more beautiful, more powerful, more particularly myself than I have ever felt, than being in his eyes in that space and vice versa. So there was something that was also being honed and called forth through this, what we were inside of and what we were surrendered to. And that to me is the ultimate evolutionary relationship. And that doesn't depend on being in love. What I found out later was that you can bring people, mutual awakening is a vehicle. I developed a practice that took people where we went. And so I can experience going into that place with you, with someone else who I, you know, I'm not in love with, you know, it's not, it has nothing to do with that. And yet we are somehow in that same realm. Mm. And something new is happening in the oneness and being called forth together. And that is what is so exciting to me.
Jim Self, who is a spiritual teacher, used to talk about, still does talk about relationships, especially what he calls fifth dimensional relationships, as you know, you have me and you have you, and then you have the relationship, and that's right. Where it becomes we, and that is quite different from the me, you know, and the you bubble. There's this whole other place, right. With completely different dynamics.
It's different than that even, because that I'm, you know, aware of that psychological reality, which is true. You know, even in a family, there's the different people, and then there's something called the family that actually has its own dynamics.
Yeah.
So that occurs anyway. This is kind of in a different realm. Part of what I discovered also later is that the future, I mean, I have a lot of history as far as having people in my family do things at the leading edge of whatever. You know, there was a quick thing. A woman named Mary Emma Mott. No, Lucretia Mott. That was the other relative. So, and she in 1848 went to London with her husband to, you know, make sure that, to work on the, what do you call it, the slavery, anti-slavery. Mm-hmm. And she and Elizabeth Cady Stanton weren't allowed in the room because they were women. And so they hooked up together and they started discussing things. And then they created the Seneca Falls Conference in 1848 in America, which was the very first women's, 300 people were there, where they established that women should have rights, and they redid the Constitution and they did all this stuff and got themselves into trouble. But they started that movement, which was 20 years before the Civil War. So, she was like, you know, they were heretics as far as everybody was concerned. And there's some other people back there. So I know that when I'm going to speak of something right now that may sound crazy, but it isn't. Okay. Because when you're on the leading edge of things, it always sounds radical and crazy.
Of course.
So what I discovered after Peter died, and then after I was teaching this and stuff, I realized that the future humanity, the future human is going to be in that kind of space and more that Peter and I shared. So right now we live on a planet, you know, and if you pay attention to anything that's going on, we have 8 billion people who are born into an individual incarnation, and they're on a journey, you know, using their free will, and they're growing and they're changing, or they're not, you know, or they're very stuck. But we assume that that is the only pattern for a human. So you're individual, you're on a journey, you're trying to get closer to your soul and to take more responsibility for, you know, some of the selfishness and the greed and the fear that we encounter as human beings. And we think that's going to be the way it is forever. But if you look, 8 billion people, 10 billion people on that journey on this planet is unworkable. Period. That level of humanity cannot go forth. We are too dangerous. We don't learn our lessons fast enough. We can't. There's no amount of unconditional love that's going to make that work. So what I realized was that as you enter into the shared oneness, the source of your individuality changes. So it's no longer this individual soul journey, which is all about growth and discovery and learning and finding your way. Kind of like a video game, you know, like where you're trying to like find your way to a certain kind of awakening or whatever, that actually we can be born into, we can begin to access this unitive, it's almost like a fabric, it's something that's alive, that when you access it, you're not creating it. You literally are given a different source of experience of your individuality. And it's not burdened with all the karma. It's literally different. And you can almost hear it like, do you know Greta Thunberg?
Yes.
When you listen to her talk as a teenager, you're like, who is she? She speaks from somewhere else. She's not speaking from the ego. She's kind of humble. She says she has Asperger's. Who knows? Whoever she is, she's speaking almost from the many as the one, as the many. She's speaking from a place of being here for something larger. She's not just an individual on a mission. She's just different. And you can hear the authority in her voice. Like there's some authority that just comes through that you're like, yeah, right. You can't argue. And there will be, in my experience, more and more, we can begin to access where she's coming from together. But there'll be more and more of the generations that come that'll be probably more like her and less like egoic, worried about themselves and how they look and how successful they're going to be and all of the things that we've been accustomed to living our lives from. So that's my sort of heretical statement.
Now, you say that there are evolutionary forces giving humanity the possibility to move from personal to shared awakening, which is the next evolutionary leap for humanity. Are you referring to Carl Kellerman's research with the Mayan cosmology and the 9 waves of consciousness and creation? Because this feels to me very much like we as a species are accessing a higher consciousness now than we might have been a few generations ago.
Absolutely. Carl is a dear friend. He's a brilliant man. And when he wrote about my work in his 9th wave chapter. and I was, you know, I'm more like, there's something, there's not this. And, you know, like I kind of like, I'm like in the cave feeling into things going, wait a minute, what's this? What's that? And I kept feeling like the source of the identity that comes from the shared unity is very pure. There's an incredible purity and innocence and just purity in it. It's not like the ego. It's not like even the soul. And I knew, I also knew, like, the answer to our problems is not going to be in science. It's not going to be in the technology. It's something, it's moving beyond. And he, when I read that book and he, you know, he reached out to me and I read it, I was just like, yes, you know, like, it's definitely, we are, I've discovered how to bring people in tune with the ninth wave period.
Right, right.
And yeah. When people get inside that, you feel like nourished and excited, and you can feel yourself getting changed, and you can taste how hard it is to be in the individual eighth wave, which is all about working on yourself and processing your relationships and trying to get along. And I mean, it's just exhausting. I think it's exhausting. You know, navigating separateness, I find exhausting. And so when you slide over, even though we aren't completely designed for it, we can come into alignment with others. And you can't do it by yourself. You can't be in the ninth wave by yourself.
No, no. And I think many people now are discovering that, you know, when they are in this consciousness, this unity consciousness, they don't even really need to explain themselves or speak, because one naturally picks up that vibration and understands it.
Yeah. Well, and the mutuality is essential. So the other thing is, you need two people or more who are literally
committed.
We were like, okay. Because if you're like going, well, I don't know if I want to be here, and I'm like all there, nothing's going to happen. You know, we are not going to enter into shared unity. It's not possible. So you have to have others that have a certain level of integrity, a certain level of generosity, and a certain level of steadfastness to keep finding your way past this bubble of self-concern, because we are all about our self-reflection and our witnessing and tracking and what's my shadow and where was I wounded and all of this stuff. And as long as you're busy with all that, and it's not that that's not valid, but it has nothing to do with what I'm pointing to, nothing.
So you developed a practice to teach people how they can achieve this. And you do a lot of online courses. How do you bring strangers together online and, you know, empower them to create maybe a, you know, unified relationship with somebody that they've never met before? How does that work?
Well, it's not so much the relationship. They enter into this consciousness together. So they have access to something, like they start to swim in something. Now, whether you have the destiny to be with someone or not, you know, that's all, I have no idea where that stuff
comes from. Sure, sure.
But we, I've taught actually I met Werner Erhard when I was 18, and I'm about to turn 70 very soon, which is frightening, but you know, it's been a long time, you know, of teaching, and to, you know, 52 years. And so I've had an enormous amount of training and experience working with literally probably over 200,000 people in groups. So I understand groups, and I'm a teacher. You know, I know how to bring people into experiences. So I think when Peter and I were given the precious gift of that kind of love and that kind of shared experience, which, you know, is one of the greatest gifts in my life. And then I didn't know, like, I was like, then, and then he died, and I was like, you know what? What am I? What was that? Don't take him. And so for a long time, I didn't know what the hell that was for, even though I would never have traded it for the world. But then when I started to teach people, I was like, oh, I need to find a way to bring them into the space that Peter and I are in, the book that you're speaking to, Evolution Relationships. There are 8 chapters that, once you understand what mutual awakening is, each chapter is an activating principle that turns on the experience more and more. So they kind of like, you know, you lean into mutual influence, or you lean into contact, or you lean into something, and it becomes more and more intense and more complete. And I just created a very simple practice. We've taught over probably 1,500 people or more how to do it. And as long as people are willing and they're not too, what is it? It's like every once in a while, someone's just, their ego's too thick. And it's just not the right practice for them. Do you know what I mean? It's actually better for them to work with a therapist or to do something else. But for the most part, the people that, you know, kind of find their way into my world usually are people, you know, like yourself or other people that, you know, they've been around, they've done some work, or they're young and they're just not attracted to all the processing. They're not attracted to the same path that I took for, you know, a number of decades. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of more wired for it. They kind of slip in and they're like, oh yeah, hey, you know? And so I do a 4-week course, which is very, very streamlined at this point. And we have other people that already know how to enter into the space. So there's a certain amount of an initiation just by being in the space with people that are in the space of unity. And so I do 4 sessions and we invite them into our global community. So we have people, we have classes like 2 to 3 times a day that people from all over the world get on who have learned how to practice and they're practicing. So they practice, they leave, they go live their lives, they come the next day if they want to and they practice. So that this can continue to grow in them, in their lives, and also in the world. So we've gotten really good at it. And the only thing I'm interested in, to be honest, I mean, I could teach on so many subjects, and I'm just not interested anymore. The only thing I really want to do is to bring people inside through the portal. And then once they're inside the shared unity, there's this whole world that opens up. And so I'm interested in getting them in and then actually giving them the opportunities that are possible from there so that we can also keep embodying this for the future. So it's not even really, I mean, even though it benefits all the people that are there, we're the cells in the body of this. Yeah. You know, we're holding something. So actually, I think that's probably even more important that you're willing to make a contribution to humanity shift itself, because we're not doing well.
Absolutely. Just a quick question before we go to break. If we follow what we were saying earlier about Carl Kellerman's work and the ninth wave of consciousness, which can be achieved, he says, in a number of ways, through meditation, through psychedelics, through evolutionary relationships, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, do you have to be in that consciousness to come into this practice, or do you find that when you come into this practice, you develop that level of consciousness?
Yeah, it's not individual. I mean, here's where he and I, you know, we've had our conversations. Psychedelics, I think, can be helpful, but it's still in the individual realm. You're still working on your soul. Yeah. You're working in the, as long as you're in the eighth wave, you're in the eighth wave. So meditation and psychedelics are in the eighth wave. And as long as you're there, you're in separation in a particular way. You actually aren't in the ninth wave. And you can taste the difference. Once you learn how to taste the difference, you can taste the difference. Mm. And Carl, you know, he's got the theories right. I'm the practical scientist. I'm the one that goes, no, actually that doesn't explode when you do the thing. That's a good theory, but it doesn't actually work that way. You got to do it over here. And he mostly listens to me.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break now. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. And my guest today is recognized leader in the emerging field of post-personal development and founder of the Evolutionary Collective, Patricia Albert. And we're talking about her book, Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Transformative Power of Mutual Awakening. We'll be back with more from Patricia Albert after this short break.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. OM Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OM Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OM Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OM Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OM Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OM Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
If I could be you, and you could be me for just 1 hour, if we could find a way to get inside each other's minds,
walk a mile in my shoes,
walk a mile in my shoes. Well, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back. Patricia Albert, you said before the break about the 8 principles of this work, the practice, and you go through them all with exercises in the book. So anyone can, if they, you know, have the right person who is committed, can also do this for themselves. Can you tell us a bit more about some of those principles and why those principles in particular?
Right. So let me explain the practice first a little bit. So basically, I never thought I would create a practice. I mean, Peter and I were never in a practice. It was like an all day, all night state of affairs. So we created a half an hour practice. I wanted to see if it would work. And so you're with a partner and we position people so that they can begin to access this immaculate unity. Not unity that we create two together, but that we discover and then find what I call the origination point, which is the source of identity from there, which is distinct from the soul, right? So first, you know, you learn how to line up with that. And then one person initiates the practice and asks the other person, what are you experiencing? Now, normally, most of us are trained to be very subjective. So almost all the training that we have in the earlier waves has to do with being in touch with yourself, root chakra, your body, your energy, your, you know, causal dimensions. And so mostly you would close your eyes, you look up, you're sensing into oneself, which takes you separate. Okay. You're witnessing all of those things are in separation. You're in your own bubble. So instead here, we teach people how to actually stay connected from the right place, which is a thing in itself. And then when I ask you, what are you experiencing? You lean in, you stay completely with me and with something larger. So you're kind of here. And then you're tracking like what's present in a way that you're not having to explain it to me because I'm completely with you. So I'm not listening to you over here trying to think, oh, well, that's interesting. And, you know, I understand that, you know, which is the way we listen is I'm so my practice is to keep becoming so at one with you that I'm kind of lost in the music, like you're the music and I'm lost in the music. And so I'm not listening to the content even so much. I'm so inside. So I'm learning oneness from there. And you're learning it. So we're staying here. I'm not inside myself. You're not inside yourself. We are somehow in a different domain together. So I ask you, da, 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 da. Then it switches. So then you're the initiator. So we're in a different flow. And then the last part is what are we experiencing? And then it's kind of like being two grapes or something. You know, we've become some kind of wine. And then you're just starting to sense into and use your heightened senses that you get from this particular domain. And you just start to go back and flowing back and forth with what's present. As you do that, so as you learn how to let go of, am I doing it right? And I mean, there's, the superego and the concerns and the, there's just, I shouldn't say that, there's a million things that go on that continue to have to evaporate. But as people practice, it's like you just, boom, you're in. Like the moment you get there, the oneness is already there. And from that place, there's intimacy, there's like love, like it's like Peter and I, like something happens where you're like with somebody you've never met before, and you experience a connection that's way beyond, like it's being given. And then the dimensionality that starts to occur, because instead of having a reference point, like most of our reference points are I'm over here and I'm listening and I'm thinking, and it's like it keeps dissolving and you start to become aware of multidimensionality. Things start to come into existence. You can feel things changing in you. And there's something that is coming more into birth out of all of us being together. We'll have like 50 people on a call. People are in their paired sharings. They come back, then we do some sharing. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's a crazy, wonderful, like, I don't know how I could have lived the last 4 years without literally having that experience of being inside with people like it was with Peter.
What sort of changes are you seeing in people?
Some really big ones. So, I mean, I worked individually. Like, I love people. I want people to be happy and free. And, I was very devoted to that. I think the superego, so the part of us that's always monitoring, really starts to come apart. And if people stay in the practice, you watch them just kind of like, they just don't even care anymore. Like whatever that is, just becomes like, annoying, and it starts to fall away, and you can actually feel the freedom and the spontaneity and the flow in people. They feel safe. There's this deep quality of love and connection that usually, you're lucky if you find that in a lifetime.
If you've got a male and female working together, is it not a risk that they could mistake this connection, this rapport, this, incredible, it must be an incredible feeling when you experience it with, passion and love and end up breaking up their other relationships.
Right. It's very interesting. So that would be the ego misusing the situation.
Yeah.
And maybe because I set the whole thing up with a lot of integrity. There's an impeccability. People have to show up, be on time. There's certain parameters that are really clear. And I'm very sane there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know that where I come from is very clean and sane in that domain. And somehow we've been really lucky. People aren't skewing it or objectifying other people. I mean, one of the things that we do in separation is even falling in love with someone, sometimes it's just an objectification where you're just getting off on the fact that you think, they're the one. And somehow it's not conducive to that. We really have a problem, which is quite interesting because one would think.
But on the other hand, I mean, you're creating a morphic field, aren't you? And when people step into that field, which is probably well cemented after many years, a lot of those lesser things fall away.
Yeah, they do. Yes. And even just networking and, all the ways that we're, one of the things I teach. So once people learn the practice and they're in the global thing practicing, I do some additional teachings with them because they know what they're doing. And so we've done some stuff on the difference between strategic ways of being and being like wholly absorptive and receptive, which is a higher order of consciousness that we're moving towards, which is more innocent and guileless, etc., which the world is not. The world is all about strategy. Give me the three tips to finding my soulmate, or, you know, somebody like Mitch McConnell, you know, like the people that are in the governments that are completely strategic. Mm. And so I've done some teaching around that from the future part of this. And you start to realize that you don't have to be strategic. Do I mean there are a lot of people that aren't naturally wired that way, and a lot of young people that are less so. And that as they enter into this kind of consciousness, it brings them more into the flow of what would really support them, so they can be more guileless and less strategic. If you're in a relationship where somebody's managing your relationship by saying things, not saying things, showing you things, it's just horrible. I mean, I find that unpleasant. And the more transparent, the other thing that happens is people get more and more transparent. So rather than being oversensitized, like a lot of people in the eighth wave get, they're so sensitive and they can't go to New York because it's too much. And, you know, there's like all this stuff. And, I'm a New Yorker, so I can say it that way. Is, you know, you become kind of transparent. So there's this quality of things like move through you. They touch you and then they just flow through. So it's kind of exquisite. Like when I walk around New York, I laugh, I cry, I see two little boys holding hands and one's helping him cross the street. You know, I mean, it's kind of like it's all flowing through. My sensitivity is heightened, but I'm not like affronted because I'm not this sensitive self that's busy trying to protect myself.
So yeah, different. You experienced this and you wanted to create it for others, help others, step into this experience and transform. Do you find that the people who are entering this practice with you reach a point where they want to go off and do something, you know, and transform other people's lives?
Well, it's kind of like if you were in taking yoga or meditation, this is a practice community. It's something that you have to grow in while you're doing whatever you're doing in the world. I mean, I find that people's relationships are better because instead of them being starving, like hoping to have certain experiences in their marriages or different kinds of partnering, they're so nourished. They're so met. They're seen deeply. So there's a part of you that's like, oh. Yeah. So then you can walk into your family and be with your kids. And if your husband doesn't see you that day, you know, you're like, I can, you know, you're full.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happens if you don't have somebody who is willing to do this with you? You know, you, none of your family members, you don't have a partner, you know, you don't have a friend who wants to do it. How could somebody experience this and enter the practice?
Well, they take the course and they have a global community of people. I mean, you can't, you know, the reliance on, okay, my best friend and I are going to do this is different than being a part of something that is literally growing. Like we've had people be in our global community and then leave and go do whatever and come back like a year later. And when they come back, they're like, oh my God, this is so much pure. Like they can feel the momentum and the purity of what is happening because it's bigger than just some interesting practice that you're going to add on to all the other stuff that you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not additive. This is not additive. This is actually something that once you get inside, it starts to shift your sense of identity and the way that you move in the world. And that's what I want. I mean, sometimes people are still more in the individual thing and they're learning this and learning that and they learn this and they think it's another thing. I tolerate that because I know that that's what people do, but I'm hoping that it gets so under their skin that they start to taste the difference because it's much denser. Like the soul work, that essential self work is a completely different thing. And it isn't what the future is trying to, you know, the future's trying to get our attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the present is showing us that the future needs to get our attention. Yeah.
And to be honest, you know, I had taught enough, you know, I was fine. I could have retired before I started this. I thought I would. I was just like, I don't want to do individual work anymore. I think I'm done. And then this showed up. So this was choiceless. This was kind of like, really? You know, like, I'm kidding. Because it's, you know, when you're also out on the edge, everybody, you know, and you're a woman to boot, you know, there's a certain amount of lack of appreciation and support and various other things. So it was very choiceless for me.
Yeah. Mm. Tell us about the free self-paced introduction to mutual awakening e-course that you offer. What could we expect to find in that?
Okay. So you have people who are listening to this. And one thing I want to say to you before we're done with this is, I'm so grateful to do this with you. You're so professional and you're so good at what you do. It's just wonderful to be with you.
Thank you.
I want you to know. I mean, it's really like, love it. You know, I'm just very happy. So, okay. So the free e-course. So if people are like going, I don't know what she's talking about, but sounds kind of interesting, you know, but I don't know, is if they go to evolutionarycollective.com, there's a free e-course, which is the first four chapters of the book. So they can download for free the first four chapters of the book. And I do additional teachings. And the first one is the difference between longing and desire, which is worth the whole e-course. So when you get the difference between longing and accessing longing and desiring something, the power of longing like jettisons you into actually a different world, a different possibility. So that starts the longing, that practice, and the extra writing and teaching is in the first lesson. And then it just goes through some of the various aspects of what is she talking about? You know, what is mutual awakening and why? And so it puts more meat on the bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then from there, if they're curious from that point, they will get an invitation to a live teaching of me talking more about it. So if they're curious, they can hear more there. And that's the way we've designed that.
What is the entry point for most people? Do you find that you get a lot of people who are in a relationship and want to improve that love relationship coming into this in the hope of elevating their relationship? Or is it, you know, people who maybe don't have a relationship but would like to move into a whole different, space, you know, in their expectations about relationship?
Truthfully, most people come and it has nothing to do with relationship. It's really the attraction is the consciousness, the shared unity, and the future, you know, like wanting to move into a different way of being human with other human beings. And so it's really like there's something about the we practice. Some people, I mean, I never loved meditation. Peter did. Mm. But, you know, and I think there are a lot of people that don't respond as powerfully to closing your eyes by yourself.
Yeah.
And so this is also very attractive to people who, this is more in the realm of love rather than consciousness. So the eighth way, you know, the newest sphere, if you want to go into that whole conversation, is more about consciousness and non-dual awakening and the rest of it. This is unilocal realization. It's actually a different domain of awakening entirely.
But when you talk about love, are you talking about agape kind of love rather than?
It's love beyond that. It's kind of really beyond. It really is. Like there's something that is so transcendent and so simple. Like sometimes you do the practice and you're just with someone and you just feel like two kids just smiling at each other. And it feels so simple that it's just, you know, you're just grateful.
Well, it is a wonderful experience when you're with someone who gets who gets it, who gets what you're getting. You don't have to explain anything because you both just understand, you know, that you're accessing the same thing.
And you know that. So mostly our job for, you know, a gazillion years is to teach across the gap, is to reach across the gap and bring people in. Reach across the gap, bring people in, reach across the gap. This is where metness, I call it EverMet, like where you're, the metness is so complete, there's no gap.
Yeah.
So something's going back and forth and you feel seen. There are people that come back and they're in tears because they feel seen so deeply. And then that starts to get to be normal. It's like being seen is like, this is not hard. You just have to learn how to get inside the right place where that becomes normal. I mean, why should that be a big deal? That's terrible.
Well, yeah.
That we don't feel seen.
And looking at the state that the world is in now, so much division and separation
and
anger and fear and anxiety. I mean, what's your goal for this?
My goal for this, I mean, I have a beautiful young executive director and some other teachers that I've trained, and, you know, I'm turning 70, so I know I'm not going to be here forever. I don't want to be here forever. So my goal is to keep empowering them and as many people on the planet that are kind of hitting their head up against the individual work. You know, they're still doing it, but they're not as inspired.
Yeah.
To bring them inside and to create like a global, you know, place where there's practices on the hour, every hour, different languages. I mean, why not? And to have people get so inside under, you know, people have diversity and they're worried about this and how do we get along? And, you know, it's like when you get underneath into this place of connection, you're gonna cry. It's just like the connection and the love is so like absolute. You don't know who they are or what they believe or whatever. From there, locking that in together can only be good. Yeah. You know, then if we go to a meeting and we've got to work something out, if we start to lose each other, we could go back into the connection and then go back to work. But trying to work things through from like, being separate and, you know, hopefully peaceful communication, like, good luck. I mean, I don't see it working.
Do you think that this could work with children, that it could be something that is introduced into schools as a practice?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the women, a French woman who's been practicing with us, her four-year-old granddaughter came to her and said, you know, they think I'm ugly at school. And so she said, she goes, you know, you're not ugly. She says, well, I don't, maybe they're right. So she said, will you do something with me? You know, Esme or whatever the kid's name was. And so she said, look into grandma's eyes and I'm going to look into your eyes and look all the way past, look as far as you can. And all of a sudden they did it. And she felt the, like the connection. And then the little girl looked away and she says, I got it, grandma. I'm fine. And it was just like, oh my God.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time now, Patricia. This is something that has been intriguing me for some time, ever since you did your first event with Carl. I think I'm going to go along and do your free e-course and we'll see what happens from there.
That would be great. If there's anything I can do to support you, let me know.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Patricia Albert, author of Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Transformative Power of Mutual Awakening. The book is published by Oracle Institute Press. And for more information about the book, The Evolutionary Collective, Patricia, visit evolutionarycollective.com. And don't forget, make sure that you look at that self-paced introduction to Mutual Awakening course, which is free. Evolutionarycollective.com. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back with another edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.
Mm-hmm.